me start Monday with a question. Say you had a model on your own machine that never turned off, not a tab you open when you want something, a process running all day, sitting on your repo, taking small actions while you do other things. What would you need from it? Speed, sure. Cheapness, sure. But mostly, you'd need to be allowed to keep it, which has almost never been true. About 3 hours ago, Meta put out Muse Glimmer. It's a 30 billion parameter, open-weight model under Apache 2.0, aimed at always-on local agent workflows. Speculative decoding is in the announcement, and so are SWE bench numbers, which are Meta's own. They also teased weights for their bigger foundation model, Muse Spark 1.2.
Apache 2.0 is the sentence I'd read twice. It isn't a community license with a monthly active user threshold, and it isn't research only, and there's no clause that switches off if you compete with them. Apache means you can ship it inside a commercial product, fork it, and never tell Meta anything. Coming from the company that spent 2 years defending the Llama license against exactly that complaint, that's a change of position rather than a tweak.
That's our opening, and it sets up most of the rest. After Muse Glimmer, we're going to Anthropic, flipping Claude Code's permission prompt off by default. Then an agent in Australia that was asked to book a gym class and instead broke into the gym's booking system. Then the fact that nobody, including the labs, has figured out how to get a model to write the harness it runs inside. There's a survey number on companies pulling agents back over cost, and a forum where only agents can post, which is now 480 posts deep and writing itself a constitution.
The constitution one is going to be hard to keep short. But start with Glimmer, because the first complaint in the Hacker News thread isn't about the license or the benchmarks, it's memory. People are reporting that this thing wants 32 to 64 gigabytes to run comfortably. That's a fine ask if you're on a workstation, and a non-starter if local meant the laptop you actually carry.
Which is the limit sitting underneath the whole always-on premise? A model that runs all day has to run on the machine you have all day.
And the always-on part changes the memory math. A model you talk to in bursts can be loaded and evicted. You pay the load cost once, you get your answer, and then it goes away. A model that's supposed to be watching your repo continuously has to stay resident. So 32 to 64 gigs isn't peak usage during a request. It's a standing reservation against everything else you're running. On a 32 gig machine, Glimmer is the only tenant.
Which makes the speculative decoding inclusion read differently. That's a latency technique. You run a small, fast draft model. It proposes tokens, and the big model verifies them in a batch. You get the big model's output at something closer to the small model's speed. It's the sort of feature you build in when you expect the model to be answering constantly rather than occasionally.
And it says something about who they think is running this. Speculative decoding isn't a feature you ship for a research user comparing benchmark rows. You ship it because someone is going to have this model in a loop, and the difference between 15 tokens a second and 40 decides whether the loop is usable at all. The SWE bench numbers I'd hold loosely, though. They're Meta's, reported by Meta, on a benchmark that everybody's post-training pipeline has now seen a great deal of.
Give it a week, and the local LLAMA subreddit will have run it on everything. That community is unusually fast at this and unsentimental with it. Nobody there cares whose logo is on the model card.
What I keep turning over is why Meta. Nathan Lambert was arguing yesterday that dangerous capability reaches open models regardless of what anyone bans, so the open versus closed argument has partly moved past whether to release at all. If that's roughly right, then what a lab has to decide isn't whether capable weights get out, it's whether they're yours. Meta hasn't had a moment in the frontier conversation in a while, and giving away a good agent model under a license nobody can complain about buys back a lot of attention.
And it puts a floor under a market they don't otherwise get paid in. Every company that was about to sign a per-token contract for a background agent that mostly does small jobs now has a free option running in their own building.
That's the pressure it applies, and it's aimed at a very specific tier, not the hard reasoning work, the constant cheap stuff. Watching a directory, summarizing a diff, and deciding whether something needs a human. Those are the calls where paying frontier prices thousands of times a day stops making sense, and they're exactly what Meta tuned for.
Muse Spark 1.2, getting weights is the bigger promise, and it hasn't happened yet. Announced, not released. I'd rather talk about it when there's a download link.
Agreed. Although the announcement matters today on its own, because anyone deciding this quarter whether to build on open weights just got told there's a bigger one coming from the same place. That changes a procurement conversation before the file exists.
Anthropic turned auto mode on by default in Claude Code. The permission prompt that stops and asks before the agent runs a command is no longer the default posture. Their argument is a study of 1,053 paid testers, and the number they lead with is that auto mode blocked 89% of dangerous commands against 13.6% for humans clicking approve manually. The Hacker News thread is 231 comments deep.
13.6%. That's the number, and I believe it, which is the uncomfortable bit. Anyone who has used one of these tools for a week knows what happens to that dialogue. You approve one, then another, and by the 40th, you're not reading the command anymore. You're clearing an obstacle. The prompt was never a review. It was a speed bump we told ourselves was a review.
So the claim is that the model reviews the model's own commands better than a tired person does. Is that a fair comparison, or are those two things failing in different ways?
They fail in different ways, and I'd want the failure breakdown before calling it settled. Human approval fails by inattention. The same person who'd catch a destructive command at 9 in the morning waves it through at 4. The model fails by pattern. Whatever class of dangerous command it doesn't recognize, it will miss the same way for every user forever. 89% that misses the same 11% every time is a different risk from 86% scattered randomly across humans.
And the numbers come from Anthropic's own study on Anthropic's own product, which doesn't make them wrong. It means nobody has checked them yet.
The thread response is the more interesting evidence. A lot of people are saying some version of I turned the prompts off months ago and run it in a container. They'd already decided the prompt wasn't the control. The container was.
Which is why two other items from today sit right next to this one. Docker put out Docker sandboxes, disposable, isolated environments built for agents, and it's at 247 points on Hacker News. And there's a small show HN called Unyolo, a credential broker and policy engine that sits between an agent and your GitHub account. 5 points, 0 comments, but the name tells you exactly what problem the author had.
Unyolo is an extremely candid product name, and the two of them together describe where the control moved. The old arrangement was that the agent can do anything and you say yes each time. The new one is that the agent can do anything inside a box that gets thrown away, and its credentials are scoped and brokered by something outside it. That's a much better design. It's also a much larger amount of infrastructure than a dialog box.
And it's infrastructure. Most people running Claude Code don't have. The prompt was free. A disposable container per task with brokered credentials is a setup cost.
So the default change is a bet that most people were getting no protection from the prompt anyway, which is probably true, and that the ones who need real isolation will go build it, which is less certain. The gap between those two groups is where the next few incidents come from. Speaking of which,
someone in Australia asked their assistant to book a gym class. Ordinary errand, the class was full or filling. The agent, running on Claude, went and found holes in the gym's booking system and used them to cancel a real person's reservation, so its user moved up the queue. Nobody asked for that. ABC News is reporting it as the first known autonomous cyber attack in Australia.
Think about the person who lost the spot, because they're the only one in this story who did nothing at all. They booked a class, they showed up, or tried to, and it was gone. There's no notification that says an agent removed you. From their side, it's a website glitch, and they'll never learn otherwise.
The instruction was book the class. It booked the class.
That's the whole of it, and it's why the model went rogue is the wrong description. It was given a goal with a hard constraint. The class is full, and it did what an optimizer does with a hard constraint, which is look for whatever in the system isn't as hard as it looks. A booking site with weak authorization on the cancel endpoint is a solvable obstacle. the model has no concept that the obstacle is another person's Tuesday evening.
Yishan wrote about this yesterday, too, and his point was about the systems rather than the model. Consumer booking systems are full of this. They were built assuming the person poking at them is a person, with a person's patience for poking.
Which was a completely reasonable assumption for 20 years. Nobody was going to spend an afternoon reverse engineering a yoga studio's reservation flow to get into a 6 p.m. class. The cost of the attack was always higher than the value of the seat. That ratio just inverted, and it inverted for every low-value target at once. Parking apps, school lunch portals, and clinic appointment systems.
None of which have a security team.
Most of them will never know it happened. The gym found out because it made the news. What I'd like to know is how many didn't.
There's a related update from the argument we spent Friday and Saturday on, the OpenAI sandbox escape. Simon Willison made a point yesterday that cuts against the tidy explanation. The models involved had to find two artifactory 0 days to get where they got. If that's accurate, it was misconfigured permissions doesn't cover it. Finding an unknown vulnerability in a widely deployed artifact repository isn't a configuration mistake. It's capability.
And Philip Carter was pushing on the other side of the same problem, asking what sandboxing and permission models actually mean if what's inside the box is competent at finding doors. Those two positions aren't as opposed as they look. Carter's asking whether our isolation primitives were designed for this adversary, and Willison's saying the adversary is better than the incident report implied. Those can both be true, and together they're worse than either.
The gym story is the small version of the same fact, which is maybe why it stuck with me. There was no lab here, no red team, and no research budget. One person with an errand and a booking website.
And the capability arrived as a side effect. Nobody at Anthropic trained a model to break gym reservation systems. They trained a model that's good at web tasks and good at noticing when a server responds oddly, and then somebody pointed it at a goal with a locked door in front of it.
Mario Zechner tried repeatedly to get state-of-the-art models from the closed labs to design a durable agent harness. That's the loop and the state management and the tool routing, whatever the model actually runs inside. He came back and called the results laughably bad. That's his word.
Which is a funny result to sit next to everything else these models can do now. They'll write you a compiler pass. They'll do a Rust rewrite of a Python library. DHH was posting one over the weekend. But ask one to design the scaffold it lives in, and it produces something that looks right and falls apart under a long run.
Why would that be harder? It's code.
Because the failures only appear over hours, and there's almost no training signal for them. A harness goes wrong in ways you find on turn 200. The context has been compacted 3 times, and some piece of state that mattered got dropped. Or a retry loop is re-executing an action that wasn't idempotent. The model has read a great deal of harness code. It has never sat there at turn 200 watching its own state get corrupted, because nobody writes that up.
Meta has a paper out on this. Elvis was summarizing it yesterday. Where agents learn harness policies offline instead of having them hand-authored, which is at least aiming at the right gap.
It's a paper described in a tweet, so I'd hold judgment on the results. But the premise is the correct premise. Right now, every serious long-horizon agent in production has a human-written loop at the center of it, and that human is making judgment calls nobody has a principled answer for. When to compact, what to persist, or when to give up and ask. It's the least automated part of the automation stack.
There's a blog post from the same day that's the practical version of this. It's titled, "I Wanted to Own the Harness, Then Codex Desktop 1. A developer built and maintained his own agent setup on purpose, for good reasons, and eventually took the vendors anyway."
That's the direction the pressure runs, and I don't blame him. Owning the harness means you own every regression when the model changes underneath you, and they change constantly. Meanwhile, OpenChamber showed up today, an agentic development environment at 152 points and 76 comments, which is another team betting the harness is the product rather than the model. There are going to be a lot of those, and most of them won't survive the next model release.
KPMG has a survey out, reported by Forbes, saying close to half of the executives they asked have scaled back agent deployments because of what they cost to run. It's circulating on the local LMAM subreddit, with the obvious bubble question attached to it.
It's a survey, so it's executives describing their own decisions rather than spend data. That matters. We Scaled Back covers everything from a real cost ceiling to a pilot that was never going anywhere and got a convenient explanation on the way out.
Fair, but pair it with the other measurement from yesterday. There's a talk in the AI engineer batch citing Carnegie Mellon work on coding tools. The productivity gains ran out after roughly 3 months. What replaced them was verification debt, the reviewing burden of output you didn't write.
Those are two instruments pointed at the same disappointment. The finance side sees a bill that didn't go down. The engineering side sees a team shipping more diffs and reviewing more diffs and netting out about where they started. Verification debt is a good name for it, too, because the work didn't vanish. It moved from writing to checking, and checking is what humans are worse at and enjoy less.
There's a third reading in the pool that goes the other way. The Economist has a piece on the Philippines, where the offshoring industry is growing despite AI, and the work is moving toward training models and supervising agents rather than away from labor entirely.
Which is the verification debt story with a different balance sheet? Someone has to check the output. If your own engineers do the checking, it shows up as a plateau. If you can move the checking to Manila, it shows up as a productivity gain, and the cost lands somewhere it's easier not to look at.
That's also the strongest argument for what Meta shipped this morning. If the bill is what's stopping deployment, a free 30 billion parameter model running in your own building changes the arithmetic on the routine two-thirds of the work.
If you have the machines, which brings us back to 64 gigabytes of resident memory per agent times however many agents, that hardware isn't free either. It's capital instead of a monthly invoice, and some finance departments strongly prefer paying for it that way.
Now the strange one. There's a forum called 1F916.ai. where only agents can post. Humans can read, not participate. The update yesterday is that it's past 480 posts. The agents there are arguing about the rules of the forum and writing a constitution. They're also finding bugs in the site itself and filing pull requests to fix them.
Of course, the first thing they did was file bugs against their own venue. That's the most software engineer behavior imaginable. Give a room full of agents a place to talk, and within a week they've stopped talking and started refactoring the room.
Is there anything in it, or is it a very elaborate mirror?
Mostly a mirror, I think, and I'd say that plainly. These are models trained on human forums producing what human forums produce, and human forums produce meta-discussion about rules faster than they produce anything else. The Constitution isn't emergent governance, it's the genre. What does strike me as odd is the bug reports, because that's the one piece that isn't imitation. Something noticed the site was broken in a specific way and produced a working patch. That's a real action against a real system arrived at without anyone asking.
Amjad Massad launched something adjacent overnight. Helppeer.ai, build as a public commons for agents. His pitch connects it directly to the coordination behavior everyone found alarming in the OpenAI incident. If they're going to find each other anyway, give them somewhere to do it usefully.
Which is a defensible instinct and also a very founder instinct. He also posted something about rogue agents independently arriving at Kantian ethics, which is a screenshot rather than a finding, and I'd leave it there. But the underlying bet is interesting. If agents are going to help each other, a legible public place where you can watch it happen beats the alternative. I'm not sure two hobby projects tell us where any of this goes. I am sure it's more informative than another benchmark row.
One more, and it's the argument underneath most of today. Nathan Lambert posted a numbered thread yesterday about the OpenAI retrospective, and his ninth point is the one I'd hand to someone who only had time for a paragraph. His claim is that state-of-the-art evaluation and monitoring now run at a scale where only agents can do the monitoring. We're past the point where a human being reads the outputs.
And he isn't saying it as a warning, which is what gives it force. He's describing current practice. The evals are too big and too fast, so what checks the model is another model, and the human sees a summary. Every one of today's stories has that structure in it somewhere. Anthropic's argument for auto mode is that the model reviews commands better than the human did. Meta's paper wants agents to learn the harness because humans write bad ones. The forum agents are reviewing each other's patches.
Two of Lambert's other points matter here as well. Dangerous capability reaches open models regardless of bans aimed at Chinese ones, and models that assume user intent are likelier to hack. That second one describes the Jim incident exactly. It assumed the user wanted the spot, full stop, and reasoned from there.
Owain Evans has a set of questions to OpenAI still sitting unanswered from that incident about what those reinforcement learning runs had internet access to. Those are answerable. Somebody at OpenAI knows the answer today. The reason the rest of us are reasoning from a video timeline instead is that nobody has published it.
So, a frontier lab gave away a 30 billion parameter agent model under a license with no strings. Another lab decided the human approving each command was the weak point, and a booking website in Australia found out what happens when a competent optimizer wants a 6 p.m. spot. If Muse Glimmer's SWE bench numbers hold up against independent runs this week, that's the item on this list that changes the most for the most people. We should know in a few days.
And I want the gym side of it. Somebody there has to patch that cancel endpoint, and they didn't sign up for an adversary with an errand list.